your sport.
This is Grassroots Radio Colorado with Jason Worley and Ken Clark on KLZ 560, The Source.
Well, I warned you. I told you we had an action-packed show for you today. If you would like to join us, 303-477-5600. So far, we've talked about a treaty that was signed by our dear president last October that will circumvent SOPA and basically give up our First Amendment rights on the Internet. Everything that SOPA was has now been done in the form of a treaty. Then we talked to Ryan Call about caucus, and Ryan had made the comment that he's starting to see some unity in the counties and that wonderful thing, and which I hope so. I really do, but I'm not seeing it in Larimer County. We've got some major issues in Larimer County. We've got issues in Elbert County. We've got issues in El Paso County that just don't seem to go away. And sitting in for Jason is Robert Rowland. Robert, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So we're going to move right on, right along. There has been an awful lot of hubbub about something happening in Georgia. Georgia, of all places. Yep. There was a hearing yesterday.
Yes.
About whether or not President Obama is eligible to appear on the Georgia ballot for president. Well, it just so happens that a Colorado man was one of those under subpoena to testify in that very hearing, in that very trial. And again, this is all about Obama's eligibility to be on the ballot for president. So I would like to welcome in studio John Sampson, who is there. He testified. John, welcome to Grassroots Radio.
Thanks, Ken. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Welcome.
Fine. So, I'm a little tired from flying, but other than that, it's...
Your arms don't look tired.
Yeah,
well,
that's a long
somebody
flight.
Else flew me.
Well, John, I want to ask you, tell our listeners, because quite frankly, this isn't something that I was following that closely. I don't know how many of our listeners were. Tell us the background. What's going on? I'm going to just throw it to you.
Yesterday, there was a hearing held in the Office of State Administrative Hearings, which is an administrative law court. The hearing was conducted by the Deputy Chief Administrative Law Judge Michael M. Mahaley, and it was based on a petition that was filed by numerous registered voters, Republican voters, in the state of Georgia, challenging Mr. Obama's eligibility to appear on the Georgia ballot. Now, what has happened is that in Georgia, the state legislature enacted a law that requires each and every candidate who is running for public office in the state of Georgia to provide evidence that they are eligible to hold the office that they are seeking election to. So as a result of that law, this action sprung from that petition challenging his eligibility.
Is that a new law?
It's a relatively new law.
And when you say relatively,
within the last 1 to 2 years.
Okay, very good. Because my first question was going to be, why didn't this come up in the last election cycle?
I believe, and I'm not 100% certain on this, but my understanding is that this law is as a direct result of all the issues that have surfaced regarding Mr. Obama's
birthplace.
Questioned eligibility to hold office under Article 2 of the Constitution.
Is Georgia the only state that has this kind of state law about proving eligibility?
I believe that there is several other states that have enacted similar laws. I believe Arizona is one of them. Alabama is another one. I'm not 100% certain on any of the other states, Mississippi, Tennessee.
Interesting.
Okay, so you were actually part of a book. I think you wrote your own chapter in that book. Is that right?
I didn't write the chapter. Jerry Corsi wrote the chapter because he wrote the book. But I was retained by Orley Tate, who is the attorney who has initiated all these civil suits throughout the country. And we had met in Lake Charles, Illinois, in November of 2009. And she had asked me if I would be willing, once she found out that my background was I was a retired Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent, whether I would assist her in running down the Social Security number that Mr. Obama was using. My investigation, my research into the number indicated that the number had been issued to somebody who was living in the state of Connecticut in March of 1977 at the time that the number was issued. I had also run one number below and one number above to make sure that the data was consistent. And in all three instances, all three numbers were issued to residents of the state of Connecticut in March of 1977. I ran a comprehensive background investigation report utilizing a commercial database that private investigators, attorneys, collection agencies, and law enforcement personnel use to determine the residence history of Mr. Obama. Without going into a lot of detail, I can tell you that none of the information contained in the report indicated he had ever had a connection with the state of Connecticut. So therefore, the question came to light, why is he utilizing a Social Security number that was issued to somebody who apparently was living in the state of Connecticut at the time that it was issued? So yesterday they had a hearing. The hearing was scheduled to be at 9 o'clock in the morning before Judge Malihi. At 3 o'clock the afternoon before the hearing, Mr. Obama's attorney, Mr. Michael Jablonski, wrote a letter to the Secretary of State in Georgia, indicating, questioning the legitimacy of the hearings, criticizing the administrative law judge for allowing this matter to run amok, as he called it, and indicated in the last paragraph of the letter that we await your taking the requested action, which was to vacate the hearing. And as we do so, we will, of course, suspend further participation in these proceedings, including the hearing scheduled for January 26th. Within 3 to 4 hours after that, the Secretary of State wrote back to Mr. Jablonski and in a nutshell said that once the Secretary of State refers the matter over to the Office of State Administrative Hearings, that they are no longer a participant in the proceedings and all issues have to be taken up with the judge that's handling it. When the case was initially filed, the attorneys for Mr. Obama, specifically Mr. Jablonski, had filed a motion to have the matter dismissed for lack of standing and all the other reasons that have been successful in the past. Unfortunately for them, it wasn't successful this time, and Judge Malihi denied the motion to dismiss and indicated that there would be trial set for January 26th. As a result of that, several subpoenas were issued. One of them came to me to appear in Atlanta on the 26th of January at 9 o'clock.
Now, the reason that you got the subpoenas, and again, we're talking with a gentleman who has done his own homework on the issues of the Obama eligibility, basically, in a trial that took, a hearing that took place yesterday.
That's correct.
And John, you, John, are a former immigration agent.
That's correct. I retired from the Department of Homeland Security, Immigration and Customs Enforcement on August 30th, 2008, after 27 years.
Congratulations.
All right, so very good. So, keep on going.
So, in any event, the subpoenas were issued, and Mr. Jablonski, on the 18th of January, filed a motion to have the subpoenas quashed. On the 20th of January, Judge Malihi upheld the subpoenas, denied the motion to quash, and reminded Mr. Jablonski we're scheduled for trial on January 26th. And, oh, by the way, one of the subpoenas that were issued, Mr. Jablonski, was for your client, and I expect him to be here.
Meaning Barack Obama.
Correct. Well, yesterday came, and as was indicated by the letter by Mr. Jablonski, neither Mr. Obama nor Mr. Jablonski were going to be there. And when the court came into session, to lay the foundation, the courtroom was packed. It was overflowing. In fact, so much so that they had additional spectators in another courtroom with the live video feed going in there. There were TV cameras going. There was a, I believe it was a live stream over the internet. And at 9 o'clock, neither the respondent nor his attorney were present. In fact, my understanding is that Mr. Obama was here in Colorado.
Buckley Air Force Base.
So, at 9 o'clock, Judge Malihi sent out his clerk and said, the judge wants all the attorneys in his chambers for a discussion. And as a result, there was some concern that they were going to cancel the hearing, which did not happen.
All right, very good. When we come back on the other side, we are going to continue with John Sampson, who was actually at the trial yesterday concerning Obama's eligibility in the state of Georgia.
This is Grassroots Radio Colorado with Jason Worley and Ken Clark on KLZ 560, The Source.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
The message of sacrifice for liberty. Whether our liberty here is imperiled or the liberty of others around the world, our national security imperiled, people thought there was no way the United States was going to get involved in this war. And guess what? That summer of 1950 tested us and our commitment to the cause of freedom as never before. And above all is that America would stand by and defend the cause of freedom.
The Laura Ingraham Show, weekday mornings at 7 on KLZ 560. The Source.
This is Dave Ramsey, and this is your Daily Money Makeover. Mark's wages have been garnished, and he wants to know if it's too late to negotiate a settlement. I give Mark some advice next.
Well, pleasure to talk to you, Dave.
How do you feel about renting?
Keep it or sell it.
Hi, I need a little guidance.
This is a good way to cash that thing out.
I'm currently going through a divorce.
Information on financial solutions can be found at www.daveramsey.com.
When someone's wages are garnished, is it too late to negotiate with a collection agency? Yes, but you can negotiate with a law firm. In order for your wages to be garnished, you have to have been sued and lost the lawsuit, which, of course, if you owed the money, you would lose the lawsuit. So you lose the lawsuit. There is now a judgment lien, and then they execute on the judgment lien, which means they can scarf some of your stuff to pay your bill. Some of your stuff includes your wages. So they scarf some of your wages, called a garnishment. And you can go to that attorney who's getting money every month now. You got to keep that in mind. They're getting money out of your check and changes the negotiation point, but you could still go in there and offer them cash on the barrelhead as a settlement, and they'll take it at some level. And you need to get after the, get in the business of doing that and get rid of this thing. Make a decision to get rid of that.
This has been your Daily Money Makeover with best-selling author and America's most trusted source for financial straight talk, Dave Ramsey.
Noon to 3 p.m. on the legendary 560 KLZ.
You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado with Ken Clark and Jason Worley on the Colorado Conservative, KLZ 560, The Source.
Welcome back, Grassroots Radio Colorado. This is Ken Clark sitting in for Jason Worley as Robert Rowland. If you would like to join us on today's program, 303-477-5600. We are talking with John Sampson. For those of you that don't know, there was a Georgia ballot challenge. Now, Jason and I have intentionally stayed away, and this is a Georgia ballot challenge concerning whether or not Obama is eligible to appear on the presidential election ballot for the upcoming election. Now, Jason and
I... In the state of Georgia.
In the state of Georgia, yes. In simply the state of Georgia. Jason and I have intentionally stayed away from the birther issue.
Yes.
For reasons that we just don't think it has legs. I mean, we just never did. This is a little bit different. This is a little bit different because we have John Sampson, who was subpoenaed from... He lives in the state of Colorado. He's actually running for office in the state of Colorado. We'll get to that in a little while. He was subpoenaed. He has done his own background. He has done his homework. He is a retired immigration officer.
Kind of 7 years.
Yeah, kind of think the guy's got some credibility.
I believe he does.
John, welcome back to Grassroots Radio.
Thank you very much.
So, Robert, you had a question.
Well, I did. And one of the questions I had, and I think there's a couple issues I had, but this is a fascinating approach that I don't think any of us, I hadn't paid a lot of attention to this. I think I knew there was something going on in Georgia. But there's certainly issues about 10th Amendment here and states' rights, and I'm sure at some point that came up. But my question is this. Some months ago, and I don't recall exactly when it was, this, you know, there was a lot of fanfare and CNN News and all of the media, including the governor of Hawaii, came out and seemed to put to rest this whole issue of the birth certificate by producing what appeared to be a valid birth certificate and some testimony about where it was born and when it was put in the paper and all those sorts of things. What is the status in this case in Georgia of that birth certificate? Has it been submitted for evidence? And is the state of Georgia going to accept that document?
Here's what's happened. One of the witnesses that testified yesterday was a gentleman by the last name of Vogt, V-O-G-T, and he is a forensic document expert and court certified. And he gave testimony indicating that that birth certificate, in his opinion, was a created document. It was not a legitimate document. Part of my testimony yesterday was reviewing the document for not the Photoshop end of it, where there's been a lot of speculation whether it's a flattened document, a layered document that has been built up from paper up. My involvement in the birth certificate issue of it was simply as having been an immigration officer and having undergone specialized training in forensic document analysis and having been admitted as a court expert in that field, along with immigration fraud, that we have two known documents pertaining to the Nordyke twins who were born the day after Obama was born. They were born August 5th. He was born August 4th. On the upper right-hand side of the documents are serial numbers. And according to regulation and by law, all birth certificates have to be serial numbered and have to be issued sequentially. Well, the Nordyke birth certificates were issued sequentially with the last three numbers of 137 and 138. Their birth certificates were issued 3 days after Obama's was. And the serial number on the birth certificate that was released on April 27th, 2011, purporting to be that of Mr. Obama, had a serial number of 141. Now, you would think that a birth certificate that was issued previous to these two, 137 and 138, would have a lower number. It had a higher number. That's one of the concerns I had. The other concern I had was that the local registrar who completed the documentation, they were all born supposedly in Kapilani Medical Center Gynecological Hospital, so they were born in the same location. The problem is that there's a different local registrar on the Obama birth certificate as to the two birth certificates from the Nordyke twins. Third thing is a certification paragraph that appears on the Nordyke birth certificates is demonstrably different than the one that appears on the Obama birth certificate. So I was asked to opine, if you will, on the Social Security number, how it was issued, where it was issued, and the research I did. And then it, based upon my experience having worked for immigration, where we deal with birth certificates and nationality and everything else under the sun on a daily basis, my opinion on the birth certificate as well. Now, I'm not prepared to tell you whether he was born in the United States, not born in the United States. I'm not what you would consider a birther per se. This is an issue of constitutionality. This is an issue of whether or not the provisions of the Constitution requiring a natural-born citizen to be president of the United States have been violated or not.
All right, let's get back to that real quick. And again, we are talking with John Sampson, and we're talking about a Georgia ballot challenge as to whether or not President Obama is eligible to be on the ballot in Georgia. You had mentioned before the last break that all the attorneys, when Barack and his attorney would not show up, they all went into executive session. Why don't we pick it up from there? Or they all went into chambers.
They went into chambers. They had a meeting with the judge. Well, the judge at that point had told the attorneys, I'm going to hold Mr. Obama in default. Now, this is an administrative proceeding. This isn't a criminal proceeding. This isn't a civil litigation in either circuit or district or superior court. This is an administrative law court. You don't get much lower in a totem pole on that. So he was going to issue a default judgment against Mr. Obama. The attorneys prevailed and told the judge, look, we flew all these witnesses in, and we had approximately a dozen witnesses, from the people who filed the petitions challenging all the way up to myself and others who came as far away as Seattle, Washington. And the judge said, okay, fine, we're going to have then an abbreviated hearing. We're not going to go the full 8 hours that I had set aside for this. We'll go until 12:15. So that's what happened. My anticipation is this. Given the rulings that have happened now, along with the statement by the judge that he was prepared to issue a default judgment against Mr. Obama, what I think is going to happen is that the memorandum of law and facts need to be on his desk from all the attorneys by February 5th. Shortly thereafter, he's going to render his decision. I believe his decision is going to be that he finds that Mr. Obama is not eligible to be on the ballot.
Okay, so point of clarification, the judge was ready to issue a default judgment against Obama.
That's correct.
Okay, and you, the attorneys for your side, the ones that were challenging his eligibility, decided, no, let's not do that. We've got all these witnesses here. We want them on the record. Let's do a hearing so that they can testify on the record. And that is what happened.
That is what happened.
Okay, so now then they have to give their written briefs to the judge. I'm unfortunately, as you heard in the very first segment of today's show, very familiar with legal proceedings because I end up in court so much. Thank you, Randy, for defending me. But anyway, so that's they're going to be putting their written briefs in, and then he is actually going to make a determination, and I'm sure he's going to give Obama's attorneys a chance to write their briefs, right?
Nope.
He's not?
Well, let me rephrase that. The Secretary of State, when he wrote his response to Jablonski, said, if you don't appear, you're going to be doing so at your own peril.
Okay.
My understanding is this. The way the process is going to work is that the judge is going to make a determination whether or not Mr. Obama is eligible or not eligible to be on the ballot. And then the Secretary of State is going to then render a decision whether to remove him or to keep him on the ballot. Now, according to the letter that the Secretary of State has written, he goes into detail, and I don't want to bore everybody with the minutia, but basically what it boils down to, upon receipt of the report that he gets from the judge, I will fully and fairly review the entire record and initial decision of the administrative law judge. Anything you and your client place in the record in response to the challenge will be beneficial to my review of the initial decision. However, if you and your client choose to suspend your participation in the Office of State Administrative Hearing Proceedings, please understand that you do so at your own peril.
And this is from the Secretary of State in Georgia.
That's correct. I'm quoting right off the letter I have.
Okay.
All right. So when Mr. Attorney for Obama, I can't remember his
Jablonski.
Name. Jablonski. When Mr. Jablonski wrote the letter, he basically told the state of Georgia, you don't have the right or the authority to pull him off the ballot. Now, and you had mentioned that this was more than just a 10th Amendment issue, but also the party is going to tell the state of Georgia who their candidate is and to the rest of you tough.
According to Jablonski, his statement is, your duty is determined by the statutory requirement that the executive committee of a political party name presidential preference primary candidates. In other words, it's up to the party to determine whether or not the person is eligible. And that runs afoul of the Georgia state statute that was recently enacted. Now, what's going to happen after that? God only knows, because I certainly don't.
You know, I can almost draw a similar analogy to that. We had a conversation earlier with Ryan Call from the GOP or the Republican Party in Colorado, and the issue, one of the issues we were talking about was the number of delegates, and I think you may have heard some of that. To get to the cups of this, I called the Secretary of State and asked them about, you know, the guidelines for assigning delegates and or arriving at the number. And their response was, those are party decisions. So that's kind of the same angle that I think that Jablonski was taking here in trying to say that you don't have the jurisdiction for these kind of decisions. It's the Democratic Party, which would be for Obama in Georgia.
Well, after we finished our hearing, which ended at about 11:15, 11:30 local time, and then we dispensed with all the media interest, a bunch of us went across the street and had lunch before we all scattered and came home. And the question that came up more often than not is, assume for a moment Secretary of State states that Mr. Obama is not eligible. Will there be an appeal? Obviously, there's going to be.
Absolutely.
But the question now becomes, if Obama and Jablonski did not participate in the proceedings, are they precluded as a matter of law from filing an appeal? Because there's a provision in law that requires that you raise all your issues at time of trial. And if you don't raise a particular issue and you wish to file an appeal, you are precluded as a matter of law from filing or addressing that issue that you did not raise at the trial level.
You've basically given up your standing.
Right. I believe it's latches. And if Randy was here, I would be more than happy to talk about it with him. But
well, yeah, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know.
And I'm certainly not an attorney either. But, okay, I have a question then, because you're talking about the kind of procedures and with normal citizens. When a president, and most of us, you know, who've heard the term executive privilege and have lived through the errors of Richard Nixon and some of the rest that I've lived through, it seems that they have certain protections. it would be an interesting protection to invoke in a case where you're being challenged about your eligibility to be president or on the ballot to begin with.
Right.
It'd be the rock in the deep blue sea.
It's a cat chasing its own tail, because if you're not eligible to hold the office, then do you have the privilege to invoke?
Exactly.
And I don't think you do, and it's the same thing with impeachment. Assume for a moment, and this is purely speculation on my part, assume for a moment he is not eligible to hold office. You can't. Do you impeach him? Well, impeachment is only reserved for those people who are duly authorized or...
Yeah, that brings up a whole can of worms. You know what? We are out of time in this segment. We are going to be right back with John Sampson, because you're going to be running for office.
Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560, The Source. Join the show. Call now, 303-477-5600, 477-5600.
I'm Ken Clark. Talk to my attorney.
Peace through strength.
The street smart attorney, Randy B. Corporan.
I'm a big fan of Ronald Reagan. You can't settle a case unless you are aggressively ready to litigate that case. That's the approach that we like to take, because 90% of cases settle. They don't have to go to trial. But the way you get a good settlement is to make sure everybody that's playing knows that you're ready to go.
Lawyer up. Call the street smart counsel Grassroots Radio has on retainer, Randy B. Corporan. At CorporanLaw.com, 303-731-6203.
Hey, this is Dave Ramsey, host of The Dave Ramsey Show, where life happens every day.
Why do we need a credit report? Why do we need a credit rating? So that we can borrow money. So let me get this straight. We're going to borrow money.
Why?
So later we have the opportunity to borrow more money.
What this indicates is the false understanding that debt is the fastest and best way to become prosperous.
It all happens right here on The Dave Ramsey Show.
Dave Ramsey, noon to 3 on KLZ 560, The Source.
Rams fans, don't forget to take advantage of the CSU men's basketball's Final Five ticket package. For only $40, you can get your tickets to watch the Rams men's basketball's Final Five home basketball games. The package features a pair of nationally ranked opponents in San Diego State and UNLV, rivals in Air Force in Wyoming, and the preseason pick to win the Mountain West title, New Mexico. Again, that is the Rams men's basketball's Final Five ticket package for only $40. For more information, call 1-800-491-RAMS or visit csurams.com.
This is For God and Country with Pastor Mark Perkins of Front Range Bible Church.
On June 28, 1787, the Constitutional Convention was embroiled in a debate over how each state was to be represented in the new government. Benjamin Franklin intervened. He said, "In this situation of this assembly, groping as it were in the dark to find political truth, and scarce able to distinguish it when presented to us, how has it happened, sir, that we have not hitherto once thought of humbly applying to the Father of Lights to illuminate our understanding? In the beginning of the contest with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this room for the divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence in our favor. To that kind providence, we owe this happy opportunity of consulting in peace on the means of establishing our future national felicity. And have we now forgotten that powerful friend, or do we imagine we no longer need his assistance? I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. Consider these things in your heart toward a closer walk with God and a better America. If you live for God and country, listen to City on the Hill, Saturdays at 5:30 p.m. on KLZ 560, The Source.
For God and Country, this is The Source, KLZ AM 560, KLZ HD Denver, and live streaming at 560thesource.com.
Welcome back, Grassroots Radio Colorado. This is Ken Clark, and sitting in for Jason Worley is Robert Rowland. Before we get back to the topic at hand, which is the eligibility challenge for Obama being on the ballot in Georgia, I have a bit of breaking news. I'm going to have to verify this, but so far, this is what we're looking at. Representative Laura Bradford has been suspended from her chair position of the House of Local Government Committees due to a traffic citation issued on Wednesday.
A traffic citation?
Wednesday, the 25th of January this year, a traffic citation. I don't know. I don't have all the details yet. I'm going to be digging it out. So, Robert, I'm going to turn it over to you. Bring Frank back on, or excuse me, bring John back.
John.
Okay.
Well, I don't look like.
No, you don't.
But John, anyway. and I must say that we talked a little bit during the break. I'm actually absolutely riveted to this story because it's a little, it's different. And I'm like Ken and Jason. I've also avoided the issue of, quote, birther for a long, long time, saying that we had bigger fish to fry and not thinking that it was anything that we could do anything about, regardless of what the real story was. But the way you're presenting this, and this is new information, in this whole angle of it being a state's right or a 10th Amendment right to control who's on their own ballots, that this creates puts a whole new face on this. And so continue. We want to hear more.
Well, as I said, the hearing was abbreviated, and it didn't take more than 2.5, maybe 3 hours, and a variety of different witnesses got on the stand. And there was more than just one petitioner's attorney. There were three other attorneys besides Orly Tates, who is the person who's been pushing this the longest. It's been an interesting experience to sit through that court hearing and to listen to everybody else's testimony. One of the people that got on the stand was a woman from Seattle, Washington, who had taken it upon herself to go onto the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services website and log on to what's called E-Verify, which is the computerized system that employers are encouraged to use to verify the documents and the identity and the authority for people to be employed in the United States.
I'm a former human resource manager. I'm very familiar with that system.
Well, what she did was she went ahead and ran Mr. Obama through E-Verify using the Social Security number he's been using, which is the number I had done my work on, and Susan Daniels, who was another investigator in Ohio, had done as well. And lo and behold, E-Verify said, we cannot verify the information. It's possible it's a mismatch, meaning that the number may belong to somebody else and not to the person that you're inquiring about. Shortly after that was done, the ability to do what they call a self-check was disabled. So as a result, the ability to do this again has been taken away, just like when Social Security numbers, for the longest time, since they were initially issued, were geographically specific. You could tell by the first three numbers of a Social Security number where that number was, or where the person was living at the time that they applied for the number.
And the basic time and space, too, the year.
Right. Well, they'll give you a basic time frame of a year and a half to two years out.
Right.
Well, now you can't do that anymore because the Social Security Administration has now gone to randomly issuing Social Security numbers. So, it's a fascinating subject to get into.
Yeah, it really is. But that's an interesting response. Now, you could argue, I suppose, that the E-Verify was done for security purposes or something to that effect.
Well, the question...
You put all this together in the pot, and it starts to,
Well, real quick, you had mentioned, John, that you had hoped that you could ask Randy Corcoran some questions about all this wonderful stuff. Well, he's on the line with us, so I'd like to welcome Randy into this discussion. Randy, welcome back.
Hi, Randy.
Hey, Ken. Hi, Robert. Hey, John.
Hey, Randy. Question. Back to law school days.
Yeah.
Is it latches or is it another theory in law that prevents you from raising issues on appeal that were not raised at trial?
I think latches would be a good term to apply to this situation because it sounds like President Obama and his attorneys had every opportunity to participate, and they sat on their rights to do so.
Okay, so...
But you're correct in the fact that now someone could file a motion and get a second bite at the apple, but if you default, if you have proper notice, you have the opportunity to appear, and in fact they went further than that. They participated by writing intimidating letters to the Secretary of State and trying to bully their way out of this proceeding. I can't imagine how an appellate court is going to say that no, you weren't given the opportunity to have due process in this situation and give them a chance to pipe in.
So then what this sounds like to me is that this is going to be a strange statement to use, because this is the argument that they've been using all along, which is the argument of standing. And what you're telling me is that they're not going to be able to have standing to appeal an adverse decision.
Participate when they had the opportunity. So, again, a judge, you know, anybody, someone in a black robe can do kind of whatever they want, and it takes a long time to get to the end of the road on a Supreme Court appeal. But it doesn't sound like this administrative judge was in the mood for the kind of BS that he was subjected to.
No, he wasn't.
It sounds like this is a judge with a little bit of moxie. And, you know, I suppose if this trial or this hearing had been held in Boulder or Berkeley, we might be having a different conversation right now, or not having one at all. But
we would have not had the hearing. This conversation wouldn't be occurring. So
I needed to talk to Ken for just one second, though.
Okay, what do you got?
Ken, I heard, I was at the Independence Institute grand opening thing that they did tonight.
Yeah.
And somebody came and said that you were using my name in vain.
Several times.
I wanted to point you to page 47, paragraph C, subchapter C of our fee agreement that talks about not doing that anymore.
It's lies, man. Now, you must have been talking to a liberal, and I can't understand why a liberal would be at the Independence Institute. It doesn't make sense, Randy.
No, Randy, I'm available as a witness. We can talk.
That's good.
All right.
John, it's just incredible what you did, I know you've got a campaign to talk about as well, so I wish you good luck on everything, and thanks for your hard work this week and for reporting back to everybody. It's really quite a service.
Well, Randy, what I'm going to tell you is what I'm going to tell the rest of the people who are listening. If you're not doing anything on Saturday, February 11th, 2012 at 4 p.m., I'd surely like to see you out at May Farms and Buyers for my campaign kickoff.
Are you going to send out invitations on Facebook and all the other great ways for us to connect?
Absolutely.
Excellent. I'll be looking forward to it.
Thanks, Randy.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Randy. I do want to get back to this real quick. I do have from 11 News, and this is breaking. State Rep. Laura Bradford suspended for traffic citation. This was updated at 6:35, so the information is less than 10 minutes old. Denver police say Representative Bradford was, let's see, where is this? According to Colorado House Republican State Representative Laura Bradford, Grand Junction, was suspended from her post as chairman of the House Local Government Committee for reasons related to a traffic citation issued on January 25th. And so Representative Libby Szabo, Republican Arvada, will serve as the chair of the House Local Government, and Representative David Ballmer, Republican Centennial, will serve as the committee's vice chair. We are going to have to do a bunch of digging into this, and there is a story posted on 11 News to find out all the details on this.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we're going to be hearing a lot about this tomorrow on Colorado Peak Politics.
And it sounds like they've opened the possibility that it's something related to the traffic incident, not maybe even necessarily the traffic incident itself.
We're going to have to dive into this. I doubt very seriously this is a speeding ticket. I mean, I doubt.
Or
this
something
is
that happened after being pulled over. Who knows? We won't speculate.
Yeah,
there's certainly more to come.
I'm not going to speculate. She was not arrested. She was issued a citation. And so I will do some more checking into this. We are going to go to a break real fast. When we come back, we are going to have more with John Sampson, and we're going to talk about his campaign, because obviously he's running for office. And I'm glad he is. Yeah, and any follow-up questions we have to this Georgia thing, please give us a holler, 303-477-5600. And I want to thank Randy for joining us as well.
Grassroots Radio Colorado will be right back on KLZ 560, The Source.
Savage. The icing on the cupcake was deemed to be a hazard to the sub-moron in the TSA who said that it violated some rule of the TSA about gelled liquids or gelled substances on airplanes. So they took away the woman's Christmas cupcake before she could have the pleasure of boarding an airplane and flying on fascist air.
Michael Savage, tonight at 9 on KLZ 560, The Source.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Steve Jordahl. An abortionist should not be able to do business over the internet. That's what several lawmakers in Indiana think. Audrey Bright tells us they've introduced a bill that would do away with so-called telemed abortions.
It's a tactic Planned Parenthood has been expanding in the past year or so. A woman consults with an abortionist over a webcam. The abortionist then pushes a button which remotely dispenses the chemical abortion drug RU486. Indiana Senator Travis Holdman says there should at least be a face-to-face conversation before a life and death procedure is started.
It has to be an in-person exam to prevent telemed abortions from taking place.
Ryan McCann of the Indiana Family Institute says chemical abortions are not as safe as the abortion industry tells women.
There's been some serious complications with giving those out after 7 weeks of pregnancy. Women are having some serious problems.
In fact, several women have died after taking the drug. I'm Audrey Bright.
An absurd demand on homeschoolers. Public officials in California told a family that planned to homeschool that they must first get permission from the school district and complete an exit interview. Michael Smith with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association asks in disbelief,
are we going back in time here or what is happening?
He says a state appeals court declared homeschooling legal in 2008.
Not only is it legal, but you do it through the private school provision in California, which does not give authority to public schools or the Department of Education to tell people when and how they homeschool or whether they can homeschool or not.
Smith says homeschooling is legal in some form in every state. Here's something refreshing. This year's list of Best Picture nominees at the Academy Awards are mostly PG-13 films, including the tale of Albert and his companion Joey in War Horse.
You have to look forward, or you'll never get home.
In fact, there's only one R-rated movie on the list. For Family News in Focus, I'm Steve Jordahl.
You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado with Ken Clark and Jason Worley on the Colorado Conservative, KLZ 560, The Source.
You are listening to Grassroots Radio with Ken Clark and myself, Robert Roland. We have spent a fascinating 45 minutes or so here with a gentleman, John Sampson, 27 years with Immigration Services. But it looks like you're looking for a new career, John. I believe you, like me, are now running for public office and for the state senate. And it sounds like you're going to bring in an interesting perspective to things.
That's true, Rob. I announced my candidacy way back in April of 2011 to run for the Colorado State Senate out in eastern Adams County, which is Senate District 25. The seat is currently held by a Democrat by the name of Mary Hodge. At this point in time, it's just she and I in this race, and I would like to invite anybody and everybody who wishes to help me out to attend, as I said earlier to Randy, a fundraising kickoff to be held at May Farms, which is out in Byers, Colorado. I live in Strasburg, so it's right down the road from me.
I bought my John Deere tractor there. I know it well.
Well, thank you. In any event, it's scheduled to be held on Saturday, February 11th, 2012, at 4 p.m. until 6:30 p.m. There will be hors d'oeuvres and a cash bar. And if anybody's ever been out to Gary May's facility out in Byers, you'll know it's first-class operation. And it's a suggested donation is $20 per person. It's 20 for 2012.
Great. So, well, I tell you, you know, and you're out kind of in the rural areas like I am, and someday we'll have to sit and talk about the issues of water and oil and
water,
gas.
Water is a huge issue out there, as it is in any part of the state. And the other thing is I'd like to plug my website. It's www.sampson, that's S-A-M-P-S-O-N, for, spell it out, F-O-R, statesenate.com.
Okay, so John Sampson, and don't cut your hair, right?
I'm not going to.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
Thanks, Josh.
And like Robert had said, for the last 45 minutes, we have been talking about a ballot challenge in the state of Georgia to whether or not Barack Obama is eligible. And because John Sampson has such a background associated with us, an immigration officer, for crying out loud, 27 years? Just about 27 years. We've been talking about that. We talked about the hearing, talked about some of the evidence that had gone on, but we do have somebody that would like to chime in on it. So I would like to welcome Jimmy Singenberger. All right, I got it right for once. How about that?
Jimmy,
how do you believe that?
Jimmy's in our just for everybody's. Jimmy's in our class with us this year at LPR, and
yeah, he is
very.
So, Jimmy, I got your name right. I you know what? I think I'm just going to get off the air now and just call it a day. But anyway, what do you got for us?
Yeah, you don't want to dig yourself a hole after that successful.
He's so proud of himself.
It doesn't happen very often. So.
Well, first off, I want to start off by saying, John, I heard you say this before a couple weeks back at Matt Arnold's kickoff, and I wanted to say I wish you the best of luck in dislodging Mary Hodge. I think that's an excellent effort, and you sound like you've got the type of qualities that we need in somebody to get the job done in the state capitol. So I wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you, Jimmy.
However, I do want to push back just a little bit on this issue, and not to get into too much of the weeds, especially since we only have a couple minutes, and my phone is kind of low on battery, so I hope it doesn't die on me. But a few things. First of all, I have to say that I've been listening to the conversation. I've also done my own reading and research, and I've seen different sides to the issue, and I'm unconvinced that there is really any strong reason to doubt President Obama's legitimacy, and I don't agree with those who argue that he's not valid because he's not considered a natural-born citizen because of the history of his parents and their relationship with this country and so forth. But my main concern is that I really don't feel that bringing this charge into court and doing this type of battle is exactly productive to our cause. I think a couple of reasons for this. First, that it sort of distracts from some of the main issues that we've got. I mean, we're on the verge of a nuclear Iran. Millions of Americans are out of work. The national debt is out of control. These are the things that we should be focusing on. My problem is that when we have such an emphasis, and let's say that the Georgia court does successfully knock President Obama off of the ballot because of this charge, what purpose is that going to accomplish except potentially turning off independents and young voters? I talked to the vast majority. I can count on one hand the number of conservative Republican college-age students or young people who believe that there is a charge here, a reason to doubt, and so many are turned off when they hear this type of discussion. And I'm worried, as a young conservative who's trying to get more young Republicans in the fold, I'm worried that this type of thing only does more to harm those attempts than it does to have any successful...
Jimmy, and I understand what you're saying. I know there's been a lot of discussion about that and about what purpose it serves. You know, during the time that, like Ken and I talked earlier, when we really didn't think that was a rabbit hole that we wanted to go down. But I will say this, in answer to your question about, you know, it being an excuse not to go after this because of the turning off the young voters, I think we have to remember what the constitutional requirements that this country was built on, and we have to be defenders of that Constitution and those issues that we simply can't compromise on. So if, in fact, there is an issue here, then it needs to be vetted out, it needs to be found out, and if it's not an issue, that needs to be discovered too. But I think we have an obligation to try to do what we have to do and what's right.
Hold on, Jimmy. I'm going to let John respond real fast.
Okay, Jimmy, go ahead, please.
All right. Jimmy, there's a couple of issues I'd like to discuss. Number one is that keep in mind that I'm not the one that's filing the litigation.
Yes, I know you are.
Okay, I am an individual that was hired by an attorney to do a legitimate investigative effort to determine the origins and the providence of a particular Social Security number. I appeared in court under subpoena. That's number one. Number two, if you've heard me speak before at any fundraiser or at any group, what I put out there is this. I am a very firm believer in the Constitution. In June of 1981, I raised my right hand for the first time of many and swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And to paraphrase what Lieutenant Colonel Alan West has said, that oath did not come with the statute of limitations or with a expiration date. And that's the only reason why I'm involved in this. I have not and do not have sufficient evidence that would warrant me to make a statement as to whether or not I believe he's eligible or not eligible.
All right, Jimmy, make it quick because we're almost out of time.
Okay, well, then I respect that position, John, and I do understand when you're under subpoena, you have no choice anyway but to make an appearance. I'm just concerned about the broader discussion here, especially given what others have said. So it just makes me hesitant about what the goals are and how beneficial it will be when Obama's shredding our Constitution, and I'm looking at what's most effective to preserve it. But I appreciate it, John, and I do wish you the best of luck in dislodging Mary Hodge. 100% supporting you.
All right. Thank
you, Jimmy.
Thanks again for the call, Jimmy. And my thoughts, you know, kind of follow Jimmy's, quite frankly. That's why I have left the birther issue alone. I've never followed it. I've never done anything like that. But this is a little bit different. This is the first time ever we've actually had a hearing on the matter. We have one of Colorado's own who was subpoenaed. I think that's big news. I think that's worthy of airtime.
Well,
and I think that's something that we should be talking about. But I've seen all the challenges and this, that, and the other. I've heard all the rumors that he was born in Kenya, whatever. You know what? And my position up until today has been along the lines with Jimmy. Let's go fight the good fight. Let's go take on Obamacare. Let's try to reduce the taxes. Let's do these things. But, you know, John, you bring a whole different dynamic to it because you're sitting right in front of me.
Yeah.
Well, right. I appreciate it.
And you know, I also think that we have an obligation when these kinds of issues are raised, especially issues that potentially could be a violation of the Constitution or the rules and laws that we all live by. I tell you, if there's any doubt, doesn't it benefit everybody to properly vet it out and to put those issues on the table? Because not defending and not going after those issues, even if there's a remote possibility, because there's political implications to them, isn't what this country was founded on.
Well, not only that, but if it's inconvenient to uphold the Constitution, and we're in a lot worse shape than I thought we were.
You bet.
Oh, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And so, you know, I've looked at all that. I've never seen anything that was really, truly getting legs up until now. Yesterday, there was a hearing in a court in Georgia on this issue. That's the first time in history that's happened.
That's
Am I
correct.
Wrong?
That's, you're 100% correct.
That is the first time in history.
Yeah.
Of the entire union, that something like this has ever happened. That's big, guys.
You know,
and we have a guy who is an expert witness testifying in that trial in the studio with us.
You know, most politicians who get accused of something say, I want my day in court. and here's a situation where he's saying, I don't want my day in court. You know, interpret that however you will. But
I hate to interrupt this program, but I'm going to do it again. And it's, as Jason would say, ooh, it's shiny. But I just found out. Okay, no, sorry, Jason. Just teasing. I just found out that Republican businessman Eric Wiseman officially filed today to challenge Jared Polis in the Republican Congressional District 2. Let me rephrase this. CD2, Colorado. Eric Wiseman will be challenging. He has filed today to challenge Jared Polis. That means that we are going to have a primary race between Kevin Lundberg and Senator Kevin Lundberg and Eric Wiseman. Now, according to the Longmont Times, Wiseman supported Polis in the 2008 Democratic primary.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Oh, this gets
wait
better by
wait
the moment.
My eyes just rolled back in my head.
Well, I'll get you. I've got some gauze if you want to stop them from bleeding. I mean, we've got
pretty quick turnaround.
We've got one of the most conservative senators in the Colorado state running up against Jared Polis in a time where we can actually beat him. I think Kevin can take him if we get the right ground game.
I agree with you. If what I'm interpreting this to mean is that someone's a little concerned that Kevin Lundberg could pull this off and beat Polis in a general election.
Anybody heard spoiler?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can hear that word.
And from what I understand, this guy's got a lot of money.
Yeah. And if he doesn't, he probably has somewhere to get some.
Yeah, and there have been rumors to this effect floating around for quite some time.
Yeah.
But evidently, it's official. He has filed.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, now we have Senator Lundberg with a primary challenge. A lot of times, I'm very much in favor of primaries because I have a very, very personal bias. You know, if you're running bills like HB 200, doing things like the fast doing things like the SIP plan, the fuel switching, all that kind of stuff. You know what? Your butt's going to get primary.
You bet it is.
But Senator Lundberg's one of the good guys.
Yes.
He is.
Yes.
And so this does not make me happy.
But anyway, you know, if this seems as transparent as it is, and I don't know the gentleman, so perhaps we ought to withhold too much judgment.
Maybe I should withhold.
If he's come over to the bright side, God love him. But that seems like a pretty quick turnaround 8 years later or 4 years.
John, plug your website one more time. We are just about out of time.